So now we'll begin with part two of our study of the two CDs that cover 2 Corinthians chapters 10 and 11. And we pick up our study of chapter 11 as we were discussing the nature of Paul's writings and what he was trying to accomplish with those writings in his epistles. And so what is Paul doing with these writings? What he's doing is he's getting points across to those whom he could not address in person because of distance and time. And so he had to cover as much as he could, because unlike on Star Trek, Scotty was not there to beam him to wherever he wanted to be at the time. And so he often covered doctrine, advice, personal revelations about himself, hurts, frustrations, struggles, defended himself, introduced people. He expressed future plans, explained motives. He did all these things, and that was the purpose of these letters. So yes, these were and are letters. We can use the fancy term epistle, but these were letters. Now, don't get me wrong. It is a given that Paul was anointed and sent of God to speak on God's behalf. But he didn't speak on God's behalf with every single word that came out of his mouth and every single word that he put the pen to the papyrus. Okay, he didn't expect to be misquoted out of context with inadequate translations in a language other than that which he spoke or wrote. Paul would be appalled, and there's no pun intended there, at what we have done with many of his writings. And this is very different reading these letters from reading, say, a prophetic book in the Old Testament. It's a different type of document, a different type of writing with, in many cases, a different purpose and a different focus. Okay? So Paul was a real man of God operating in the real world. Okay? Now, God was definitely capable of beaming Paul from Macedonia to Corinth so that he could say what he had to say in person, but he did not choose to do that. He could have made Paul impervious, okay, to the threats of the false teachers, and thus he would feel no need to fret over it nor to defend himself. But God did not choose to do that either. God could have spoken from heaven and told those who canonized the Bible, as we now know it, exactly what to put in it and what to leave out, and which books were lost and where to find them, and all that sort of stuff, all those letters. But he didn't. Okay? So God could have made sure that none of the writings from the Bible times at all were lost. He could have made sure that we all just, you know, beam down the knowledge to every single person. There would be no disagreements whatsoever. But God didn't do that. So that begs the question, well, why? It's sort of like when people ask questions like, you know, why do people suffer? The answers are there, but we just don't look for those answers very often within the Bible, because we look at it sort of with predetermined ideas, preconceived notions. We sort of already have our minds made up about God, or we read the scriptures individually and without context. But the question is, again, why didn't he? Now, the answers are not literally and obviously just printed word for word in the Bible, but I do believe that the answer is there if you look at the Bible and God's character as a whole. Okay? So God could have saved us a lot of grief and could have made things much easier, right? Yep, sure could have. God knew that then and now, that those things have never solved man's basic problem. Okay? If he had just made things easy for us, that wouldn't solve our problem. The Old Testament was much more obvious and chronicled and protected And it was more global for the Jews. And the applications of what's written there were rather clear. Okay? But that didn't stop the Jewish scholars and leaders from taking it and making its applications nearly unrecognizable to the very one who inspired its writings, God in the form of man, Jesus Christ himself. So the simplicity of it didn't make a difference. The fact that it was universally accepted wouldn't have made a difference. None of that would have made a difference because man's nature would still be to screw it up. So it matters not. The Old Testament was the Old Testament, and you still had schisms. You still had the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Zealots and all the other guys. That was not going to do it because man is still who man is. So no, folks, all of the help that God could give us would not erase a law that God has refused to repeal. And that's the law of man's free will. Now, even though Satan is the author of sin, sin ultimately, as we see it, comes from the heart of man. The very first sin in Adam and Eve came from the heart of Eve, the same type of heart that Adam had. Satan just made a suggestion. It did not have to be followed. But free will is the legal conduit by which man exercises his ability to act out what is in his or her heart. So think about all the technology that we have today. Do you think that the internet and email would have solved Paul's problem any better? Well, the answer is no. Technology has never brought man closer to God. It has never made man less sinful. It has never made man act any better or have anything better in his heart. Rather, usually it just lets us sin faster and in more ways. Even the printing press, which allowed the mass production of the Bible, didn't solve the problem, didn't do it. The powers that be still didn't want everyone to have the Bible individually. So they passed laws to limit access. And it was only because of the ingenuity and perseverance and the passion of those Christians that had it within their hearts to bring the Bible and God's word and God's learnings and God's knowledge to God's people. And then those people exercising what was in their heart, exercising their free will, okay, to manifest what was in their heart and therefore make the dream a reality of having each individual person have access to the Bible. And so, of course, there's no question it required God's help, but God chooses to use willing men and women to do his work on earth, his choice. So again, that question, why was the Bible allowed to be left in the form that it is, that we find it in? Well, number one, because Paul and the other writers never expected the writings to be abused the way that we sometimes do. You know, who with a decent IQ reads a letter, a newspaper, a tabloid, a biography, a narrative, a textbook, and a prophetic statement from a prophet all the same? The answer is, unfortunately, in many cases, we do. But Paul and the others gave all of their contemporaries the credit for knowing the context of their day and their time so that they could read what they read properly and normally. And they gave those who might read those writings later, okay, the benefit of the doubt that they, meaning we, would not read letters written from one to another, which is what they were, okay, and then extrapolate them far beyond the context, and even worse, edit and take excerpts and preach them as doctrinal truths totally without perspective and without context. How would you like it if somebody took your letters and did that? So that's reason number one, that the Bible, I believe, was allowed to remain the way that it is. Of course, we've already talked about the fact that I don't think it would have made a difference, and I believe God knows that because sin abounds and man is going to be man. And that sort of leads to the other reason that I believe the Bible was allowed to be created and remain as it is. And that is that God knew that it wouldn't make a difference. Not just because of man's sinful nature in dealing with things, that including the writings of godly men, but the essentials of the gospel message are very basic. They are not protean. They are not many. And not only would it take probably less than the space of an average New Testament chapter or less to state those basics, because, and they are indeed repeated over and over again in the Bible, but they are so simple that man just can't stand it. He could never stand it. Scholars and leaders in the Jewish faith couldn't stand it and made it way more complicated, and neither could those after Jesus' ascension and the day of Pentecost in the New Testament church. Couldn't resist. Man will always complicate and confuse things given the chance. So how simple and plain were God's words when he said, "Don't eat from this one tree at the center of the garden, or you shall surely die." Straightforward, didn't mix it, you know, mince any words. It's straightforward. You will surely die if you eat from this, just this one tree. And then the Tower of Babel proved what man would do when too many sinful hearts cooperated in a vacuum towards one end. Yes, indeed, we have the power to destroy ourselves. And we had that power way before we had nuclear bombs. So given man's nature, it was more expedient for Paul to have to write all these things in letters. You see? It allows us to see all of the aspects of his ministry and thinking and feeling in various situations and conditions. This was necessary, of course, due to man's nature. So Paul's experiences, Solomon's wisdom, God's relationship with Israel and the rest of the Bible could reach down, because of the writings, reach down through generations and instruct, remind, admonish, and encourage mankind. All through God's understanding and intimate knowledge of his creation, that being us, and all as a wonderful expression of God's love. So there were always going to be controversies and questions and doubts about certain things. But since Paul dealt with the various folks in the New Testament and that was chronicled in writing, we gain as a result. We've got those examples to go by. We've got those godly gospel concepts applied to specific situations to help us in this day and age. Well, folks, okay, with that, I think you are now ready to read the rest of the chapter. And really, I think you're more ready to read all other parts of the Bible, for that matter, with a better framework in mind. And now I chose to drive this point home at this point because I think that it would have been a stumbling block for me to mention this kind of thing at the beginning of our studies. I think now that you've studied a great deal of the New Testament with me, I think you understand much more clearly where I'm coming from with this, and I think it would have thrown you off too much in the beginning. And so all of that understanding is to prepare you for what's to come as we read the rest of what Paul had to say. So these next verses are really were the most obvious place thus far to invite the discussion of this subject of the Bible, its origins, its utility, its the study of it. So with that, let's read on beginning at verse 16. So let's read verses 16 through 18. Paul says, "I say again, let no man think me a fool. If otherwise, yet as a fool receive me, that I may boast myself a little. That which I speak it not after the Lord, but as it were foolishly, in this confidence of boasting, seeing that many glory after the flesh, I will glory also." Now, Paul, when he says this, he doesn't mean being taken for a fool, but rather someone who's off or who's lost his wits. But he says, if you have to listen to him as a witless man, then do so. But he's going to have his say. Indulge me, he says. And verse 18 couldn't be clearer, where he says, seeing that many glory after the flesh, I will glory also. And back in verse 17, even more critical is Paul's clear statement that he knew that he was about to do something that was not God-inspired or even necessarily God-authorized. How much better would we be? And how much better off would we be if we teachers and preachers understood this line better? Unfortunately, what we do is we look at St. Paul as if he is perfect, and then we'll look at a verse like this and we will give it a meaning that fits the way we want to see Paul. Paul was just writing here, okay? He was trying to make a point, and in this case, he was going to foolishly indulge himself in glorying and bragging, and I think he made himself very clear. And so the answer is yes, we would certainly be better off if we could look at the scriptures for what they really are and then edify the people with the teaching as God leads. So indeed, it is very sad that some preachers don't know the difference, don't discern the scriptures. That is true. But some actually know it. They know exactly what the verses are trying to say. They've studied them. They have an intricate knowledge of it. But they find that the intoxicating power of the bully pulpit is just too much to resist. And yes, as I mentioned before, there are those who don't know the difference, and some who don't want to know the difference, and don't care to know the difference, and they really don't even try to draw a line between the two. Now, both of these groups, unfortunately, those who know the difference and for their own purposes, don't point out the differences, don't tell it like it really is, and then those who don't know and aren't really trying too hard to know, these two groups are both comfortable with the resulting replacement of God with themselves in the lives of most of the people, unfortunately, that follow them as their leaders. So that is, again, that's something I don't like, but that is the way it is. And fortunately, we've got Paul's example to learn from. And so aren't you glad now that Scotty couldn't beam or didn't beam Paul from Macedonia to Corinth? We wouldn't have Paul's example to learn from. We wouldn't know so well that the great fathers of the faith were indeed human, dealt with practical situations in very pragmatic ways. And now, this is not to say that Paul is going to the point of sinning here, but clearly he is doing something that he knows is not usually expedient, and even in this case isn't necessarily going to edify, except for those whose hearts are pricked by the ultimate message that he was coming across with, which again is in verses 1 through 4. Remember that. And so now verses 19 through 28, I think I'm going to read those uninterrupted. Okay? And Paul writes, "For ye suffer fools gladly, seeing ye yourselves are wise. For ye suffer if a man bring you into bondage, if a man devour you, if a man take of you, if a man exalt himself, if a man smite you on the face. I speak as concerning reproach, as though we had been weak. Howbeit, wherein soever any is bold, I speak foolishly, I am bold also. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more, in labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes, saved one. Thrice have I beaten, was I beaten with rods. Once was I stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeyings often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Beside those things that are without, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches. And so Paul, boy, as you can see here, he's letting it really all hang out. He is really bragging and boasting and self-promoting at this point. And in verse 28, he really brings it home. On top of all those things, he says, I have the burden, the daily burden, of all of the churches that he had founded. And now finally, in verse 29, Paul says, who is weak and I am not weak? Who is offended and I burn not? And so Paul, like any good, like a good politician at election time would say, you know, I feel your pain. Nobody feels your pain, like I do or better than I do. And so Paul is pointing out here, that he championed the cause of the weaker people and felt their pain. So, you know, as you read the previous, verses that we've just read here, if you took these as excerpts out of context, Paul would surely sound like he's running for some office. You know, well, guess what? He was campaigning. He wanted to win the hearts and the minds of the Corinthians back to the true gospel, that he had given to them. And, he's taken the gloves off with good reason. You know, he was tired of being accused himself. He was tired of wrestling with the Corinthians about these matters, but he also cared deeply for those Corinthians who wanted to hear the truth and who wanted deep down in their hearts to realign themselves with God and his teachings. So as you can see here, Paul reluctantly was bragging flat out, and he made it plain. And so even Paul knew that he needed God's patience and God's mercy and God's grace. And so now, folks, I'm gonna stop here, because the other verses of this chapter, the latter few verses, really do belong, more appropriately studied, along with chapter 12. And so I'm gonna cover those at the beginning of the next Bible study CD. And so with that, you know, I just wanna wrap up by, saying that I know that last, little segment was difficult for some. You know, there are many who need to take the Bible as this perfect thing that God just, you know, opened up a page and wrote or dictated to somebody to write. And they need that to be what the Bible is in order to believe their faith and or defend their faith. I don't think that's necessary. I think that the Bible certainly is, if not inerrant, it is completely and overwhelmingly capable of accomplishing that for which God gave it to us. We just lead people astray, confuse folks, make things more difficult than they need to be when we fail to do our due diligence in studying the Bible, or study it and then fail to pass on that understanding so that people can grow and thrive and get closer and closer to the Lord. Well, I know that this really was a very short CD. That's just the way it turned out. As the information in chapters 10 and 11 clearly would not fit on one CD, but I felt like they were important enough to have together to structure the two CDs this way. Because of the room that we have left on this CD, as a consequence of that, I do have a couple of songs for your listening pleasure. I didn't choose them for any particular reason. I just wanted you to enjoy them. And I really pray that you have benefited from this particular CD set. I pray that you have come to better understand the utility of the Bible. I hope you have a better understanding for how we should study the Bible and why. I hope you have a greater appreciation for the humanity of those great men and women of God that have served him so diligently, and who, particularly for Paul and others, who left writings for us to be guided by. And so I hope that that's inspiring to you. I hope that it energizes you, and you will go out and bless the Lord with the fruit of your labor financially, the energy that you have in your body that he blesses you with, and that you would present your body a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto the Lord. And of course, as always, whatever you do, as you uncover that hidden treasure in you and bless the Lord with it, of course, I would want you to do it all in the name of the Lord, for the enrichment of God's kingdom, and simply put, for God's glory.